We shall fight with growing confidence and growing strength in the air. We shall fight on the beaches. We shall fight on the landing grounds. We shall fight in the fields and in the streets. We shall never surrender until, in God's good time, the new world, with all its power and might, steps forth to the rescue and the liberation of people.
In times of universal deceit, truth is the only rebellion left. On today's show, I'm going to discuss the fallacies of the week, those most egregious errors in communicating with one another and making an argument in the market square of ideas in the political discourse of our time. Fallacies such as straw man, the non sequitur, ad populums and ad hominems, and how the mainstream media and others are using this, and we don't even notice it. I'm Dr. Everett Piper, and this is The Rebellion. Welcome to today's edition of The Rebellion. Today's topic is Socratic logic and fallacies. Now, some of you are saying, hey, we've already talked about that months ago. You've already gone over these things with us. But we're going to revisit that today because as you watch the news and as you digest today's information, especially as it relates to the political discourse of our time, the market square of ideas, and the way we exchange information, the way we debate, the way we argue, the way we accept or reject information that's being given to us, and the way we try to communicate that information to others, today's environment is just rife with fallacies. And this past week, as you're listening to the news and as you're trying to figure out what's true and what's false, it is loaded. The news is loaded. The social media is loaded with fallacies. That's what we're going to talk about today. And I'm going to cite some specific examples and try to go over those fallacies again with you and why being able to recognize them and being able to avoid using them yourselves is so important if we're going to be effective in the market square of ideas. But before we do that, remember that if you'd like to subscribe to The Rebellion, you can do so by going to patreon.com/Dr. Everett Piper, patreon.com/DREVERETTPIPER. Remember that you can listen to The Rebellion live Monday through Friday at listentothebrew.com. Live Monday through Friday online, listentothebrew.com at 7:30 a.m. Central Time. That's listentothebrew.com. And if you'd like to access back issues of The Rebellion, please do so and upload those so that it improves our algorithms. So don't just go listen to The Rebellion via a podcast. Actually upload it so that the algorithms actually work to our advantage. I don't know how it all works, but I just know that when you actually do that, it bumps our numbers up and we get more listeners. So please consider doing that. Also remember that you can subscribe by going to patreon.com/Dr. Everett Piper. Back to today's topic, fallacies of the week. Fallacies of the week. The first one I'm going to talk about is the straw man fallacy. Now, the perfect example of that was what I read to you yesterday in the Newsweek article where they referred to the pro-life evangelicals for Biden and how this group circulated a petition. This is the quote out of Newsweek, circulated a petition explaining that while it disagrees with Biden and the Democrats on abortion, that poverty also kills. So does a lack of health care and smoking. Racism kills. Unless we quickly make major changes, devastating climate change will kill tens of millions. Unquote. One more time. This is a perfect example of a straw man fallacy. So one more time, let's go back to the pro-life evangelical statement where they're justifying supporting a man who's blatantly against life, who supports aborting children even after they're born. Joe Biden and Kamala Harris believe that it's okay to leave an infant that has survived a botched abortion in a cold steel pan in the operating room to die without any intervening health care or medical assistance to save that child's life. That's true. That's a fact. That is not a contrived argument. That's not hyperbole. That's not an exaggeration. They have defended that practice by voting against the Born Alive Infant Protection Act. So if you're listening to this and you think that's an extreme position on my part, Excuse me, what's extreme? It's extreme to leave a living human being in the operating room unattended to die. That's extreme, especially when it's the most vulnerable person among us, a newborn. But pro-life evangelicals are defending the support of a man who supports that atrocity and that butchery by saying, well, yes, we disagree with him on abortion, but poverty also kills. And so does a lack of health care and smoking and racism kills. And so does climate change. It'll kill tens of millions. So we're pro-life because we're trying to solve all those problems. We're not going to get fixated on abortion. This is a perfect straw man argument. It is a fallacy of the straw man. It assumes this. This is why it's a straw man. It assumes that conservatives smoke. I mean, where did smoking come in? I mean, I had a fit on that yesterday. Why do they even say smoking in here? I mean, this are Republicans the only ones that smoke? Democrats don't? I mean, this is just, like I said, asinine. It's a ridiculous argument. And keep in mind when I say it's a ridiculous argument and it's asinine, I'm referring to the idea. I'm attacking the idea. I'm not attacking any people or any person. The argument is asinine. The statement is ridiculous. It's foolish. It's nonsense. It makes no sense. You attack ideas, don't attack people. And if people get offended when you attack ideas, you need to gently and firmly and clearly pull them back to the fact in play, and that is you're attacking their thinking and their ideas, their broken way of reasoning. You're attacking their logic or their lack thereof. You're not attacking them as people. You're not calling them names. You're saying that their ideas are broken, wrong, and foolish. Okay, so back to the point as to why this is a straw man. It assumes that conservatives are the ones that don't care about health care, and liberals do. It assumes that conservatives are racists, and liberals and progressives aren't. It assumes that conservatives are going to kill millions of people by ignoring the responsibility to be good stewards of the environment, and progressives aren't going to do that. Well, that's a scarecrow if I've ever seen one. It's easy to construct this scarecrow, this straw man, and then flail away and knock it down. Why? Because it's not real. It's a fake argument. Because conservatives do care about conserving the environment. They're conservationists. We just have a different way of doing it. That doesn't mean we don't care. Our methods may differ, but our message may be the same. The message may be, let's preserve the environment. We believe there's a better way of doing it than throwing trillions of dollars of wasted government money at an illusion that isn't supported by all of the data. This illusion of global warming, this illusion of climate change, this illusion of the Green New Deal. This stuff doesn't make any sense economically, if nothing else, because it'll kill millions of people in the third world by forcing them to live without clean energy that those of us in the developed world enjoy. When you start orchestrating all of this climate change economic stuff and imposing it worldwide, the people that are going to suffer first and most are going to be those people in poverty in the third world, because they're going to be forced to go burn whatever fuel they can find, dung and dirty wood and whatnot. And guess what? They're going to suffer early death because they've had to burn this dirty fuel. So don't tell me that we don't care about tens of millions of people. Don't tell me that we're racists when we're the ones standing against critical race theory and the racism that's endemic in that particular worldview. We're the ones saying, oops, excuse me, we'd rather have a colorblind society than a color-fixated society. We'd rather talk about virtue rather than victimization. We'd rather talk about the things that are important that lead us to be good and selfless rather than fixating on selfishness and self-righteousness and self-indignation. We'd rather do those things because they seem more biblical to us and they seem to be proven through the course of human history to work better than your agenda. So don't allow these people to construct the straw man, this scarecrow that's held together by string and twine. This is why people build straw men in the first place. They're always, always easy to defeat. It's easy to defeat your opponent when he's nothing but a scarecrow. The reason for that is that a scarecrow isn't real. But here's the thing. When you flail away at a scarecrow, your victory is meaningless because the opponent had no real definition or real meaning in the first place. You're beating something up that doesn't even exist. So the straw man of the week is the pro-life evangelicals for Biden and their ludicrous claim that somehow they're the ones who care about health care. They're the ones who don't smoke. They're the ones that aren't racist, even though they're embracing radical racism of critical race theory. They're the ones who are going to protect tens of millions of people by imposing these regulations upon the poverty-stricken countries of the world and communities of the world and forcing tens of millions, hundreds of millions of people to burn dirty fuel. Again, don't let them construct the straw man of them being the good, righteous, selfless folks and making you out to be the exact opposite, when in fact, that's just not true. Let's go to another one, and then maybe we'll take a break after that and deal with a couple more. Here's a straw man that the advocates of this Affordable Care Act and those that are advocating for radical global warming initiatives use all the time. It's called the ignoratio clinche. Ignoratio clinche. Basically, it's the irrelevant conclusion. A way to say it is it's the fallacy of you're missing the point. You're ignorant of the point. Ignoratio clinche. It literally means you're ignorant of the chain. Ignoratio clinche. You're missing the point. So here's what they do. The premise of the argument may be true, but it doesn't support the conclusion. Here's an example. Chamberlain thought peace was preferable to war. Well, that premise is valid. All of us would prefer peace to war, right? Only the most evil among us would rather have war than peace. So Chamberlain, his premise was peace was preferable to war. Therefore, he sought appeasement with Hitler. So the premise didn't support the conclusion. His conclusion was, let's pursue appeasement with Hitler. What he didn't recognize is that that appeasement, that strategy of appeasement, actually encouraged Hitler to go to war because Hitler smelled weakness. He smelled fear, and he was going to crush Chamberlain and Great Britain because of it. It was only Churchill that stood in the way of that, that stopped the aggression of Hitler by saying, you want to go to war? We'll go to war and we'll crush you. We'll fight you. We'll fight you in the air. We'll fight you in the beaches. We'll fight you in the streets. We will fight. We will never surrender. Never, never. Churchill's premise was the same as Chamberlain's. Peace is preferable to war. But he didn't conclude that the best way to achieve that was appeasement. He concluded the best way to achieve that was strength in the face of an evil despot. Do you get the point here? Well, the people that are arguing for the Affordable Care Act, that's a good premise. Everybody should have health care. Everybody should be able to care for their health. But their premise doesn't support the conclusion that the best way to get that is to make the government, Big Brother, in charge of everybody's hospitalization, health care, medicine, and whether or not you get it or don't get it, and whether or not the government has the authority to say, no, you're too old, you're too vulnerable, you aren't going to get the care within the time frame that you want it. So if everybody's going to get health care, that's a good premise, but the Affordable Care Act isn't necessarily the conclusion. Likewise, with global warming. Here's the premise. The weather is unpredictable and dangerous. Well, okay, true. The weather is unpredictable and dangerous. Therefore, global warming and climate change are real. Well, no. The fact that the weather is unpredictable and dangerous does not support the conclusion. The weather's always been unpredictable and dangerous. We live in Oklahoma. We know of the Dust Bowls back in the 1920s and 30s. The weather's always been unpredictable and dangerous. That doesn't support the conclusion that global warming and climate change are real. In fact, the advocates of global warming and climate change have been caught cooking the books. And as I've said on earlier shows, when somebody's cooking the books and changing their data, there's always a reason for it. If I would have done in my dissertation defense what these advocates and defenders of global warming and climate change are doing in terms of hiding and manipulating their data, I would have been laughed out of the room at Michigan State University, and I would not carry the title doctor today. So the premise may be good, but it doesn't necessarily support the conclusion. The chain of events is broken because you're ignorant of the change. Ignorant of the chain. Ignoratio clinche. Let's take a break right now and acknowledge our sponsors. And when we get back, we'll talk about the non sequiturs, the ad populums, the appeal to authority, and then I'll conclude with the ad hominem. I'm Dr. Everett Piper, and this is The Rebellion. We'll be right back in a couple minutes. Welcome back to The Rebellion. Let's talk about the next fallacy here, the non sequitur. It's so frequently used. In fact, Peter Kreef, a philosopher I use a lot in terms of talking about logic and Socratic reasoning, has said that the non sequitur was so frequently used by his students that he actually had a rubber stamp made up where he could just stamp the paper saying non sequitur. So this is one that we all use. It's a temptation that we all fall into, but it has been used so frequently by the left, I've just got to point it out one more time. We could change the name of the non sequitur to the "but Trump" fallacy. I think you know what I mean. Every time you bring up something that Joe Biden has done, or Kamala Harris has said, or a position they hold, or that Nancy Pelosi has done, or that Chuck Schumer has done, or AOC, the list goes on and on. When you criticize the squad, the response from those who can't tolerate a conservative agenda is, "but Trump." Well, frankly, so what is the response? The non sequitur is the so what fallacy. Who cares what Trump does or does not do, said or did not say? The veracity of Joe Biden's position needs to be assessed in and of itself, regardless of what Trump says, doesn't say, regardless of what Trump is or is not. That doesn't matter. If Trump swears, if he's had affairs, if he's pugnacious, if he's salacious, if he's rude and crude, if he's a big bad meanie and a big bad orange man, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Stop the nonsense of just responding to a conservative position by saying, "but Trump." None of it has anything to do with the fact that Joe Biden has also done a lot of this stuff. He's also been accused of rape. He's also been caught lying flagrantly. He's plagiarized speeches. He's plagiarized his academic work. He's lied about his academic awards and his academic status. He lied about the death of his own wife and daughter. And he ruined a man's life by accusing him of being a drunk driver when he wasn't, when that led to his wife and daughter's death. That's a fact. It's a fact that he's lied about being involved in the civil rights marches and the civil rights movement. He co-opted this particular agenda for his own political gain. It was stolen valor. These are all facts. Oh, but Trump. It doesn't matter. Stop saying, "oh, but Trump." That's a non sequitur. It's a so what. This is the fallacy that we're using all the time today, and we let our opponents get away with it. And don't you ever use it. It's nonsense. It literally makes no sense. None of it has anything to do with the issue. And the issue is, which position is right or wrong? Which position and policy will best uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States? Oh, but Trump! Stop it. It is such a childish fallacy. Here's another one. An appeal to authority. Well, CBS and NBC and ABC, they've all declared Biden the victor. Who cares? Who made CBS, NBC, ABC, and the mainstream media the wizards of who wins and who loses and who should be declared the winner of any given election? Where did they get that status and that position, that authority? This is an appeal to authority, and it has nothing to do with the veracity of their claims. Just because CBS, NBC, and ABC did it doesn't mean anything. It's an appeal to their authority just because they're bigwigs, I guess. They're elites, they're know-it-alls, and therefore their authority should win. They don't know anything more about the election than you and I do, and we should call them on that. Here's another fallacy. It's the repeated false narrative, where they keep repeating things over and over again. An unfounded assumption over and over again, as if the repetition will make it true. For example, there's no evidence of fraud in the election. Trump claims that there's fraud, but that's without merit. How many times have you heard that over the last few days from the mainstream media? What little fraud there may be will not change the outcome of the election. CNN has done this repeatedly. MSNBC has done it repeatedly. CBS, ABC, NBC, Huffington Post. And even Neil Cavuto on the Fox Business Channel did it with Trump's press secretary when she started actually providing evidence of fraud in question. She was cut off. Cavuto cut her off and said, well, I'm not going to tolerate this because she doesn't have any evidence of fraud, and therefore I'm not going to let the rest of you listen to this. Well, thank you, Mr. Cavuto. We could have decided, I think we're smart enough to decide whether or not the evidence that she brought to the table should be attended to or should be discarded. We're smart enough. We don't need you babysitting what we do and do not hear. This is a repeated false narrative. There's no evidence. She doesn't have any evidence. What little evidence there is won't change the outcome. Says who? How would they know? They should be reporting the news, not editorializing and shutting off information because we're not mature enough, I guess, to hear what this argument is and whether or not we think we should believe it or challenge it or accept it. They should let you and me decide if the evidence points to fraud or not. Who are they to tell you what to think? And who are they to tell you what evidence has merit or lacks merit? We should decide ourselves. A couple more fallacies. The ad populum is an appeal to the populace. Well, everybody says it. Everyone in D.C. in the mainstream media believes Trump's accusations are fraud and of fraud or unfounded. Well, who cares if everybody in D.C. says it or in the mainstream media says it? We need to evaluate the evidence ourselves. That's what the courts are for. That's what we should respect and let that play itself out. Everyone is pretending that we should just shut up and not question the populace, the popular opinion, what everyone else says. Now, I want to close with the ad hominem. An ad hominem is the attack of the person rather than the attack of the ideas. And here's one of the things I need to do a little bit of a mea culpa here. One of my listeners, a very loyal supporter, pointed out to me after yesterday's show, or the show before that, I think, that I came dangerously close to this in my critique a couple days ago of a professor that I was chagrined with, who posted a celebration of Biden's victory. A professor who said that he was thrilled that we finally have a president elect publicly committing to seek the best for all Americans with a record of decency, honesty, integrity, and convictions rooted in faith, science, and truth. Hallelujah, said this professor. Things like this belong together. Well, as you all know, my response to that was, this is about the dumbest thing I've heard all week. It's asinine. It's an asinine statement. And I went on to explain why. Now, I went back and listened to my show. In fairness, I never did say that the professor was dumb or stupid or asinine. I said his ideas were. I said, this is the dumbest thing that's been said all week. It's an asinine statement. But here's the thing. I should have prefaced my critique of those ideas by saying, I'm going to be getting pretty aggressive here in the next minute or two, and I'm going to call these ideas what they are. Dumb, stupid, foolish, and asinine. Now keep in mind, as I do that, I'm not calling the person names. I'm calling out his poor thinking, his poor conclusions, and his poor ideas. I should have said that. And if I would have done that right up front, I probably would have had a stronger argument. Because as my listener said, by getting so close to the ad hominem, you give your adversaries reasons to dismiss your point. And that is true. My friend, my listener, My loyal follower called me on this, and he was right to do so, because there's a final fallacy that Peter Kreeft points out in his Socratic Logic book, and it's a fallacy called winning the argument but losing the arguer. Basically, that's self-explanatory. You can win the argument, but if you're using too big of a hammer, you might actually lose the arguer. In other words, the person you're trying to convince. And by getting so close to the line of the ad hominem, I might have lost the opportunity to actually convince a few people. I'm not sure. I think a lot of the people that heard that critique had their minds made up before I even took my second breath. But that said, if I would have clarified this is not an attack of the person, it's an attack of the ideas, I might have been able to have a longer conversation with a couple people and get them to listen to the logic of what I was trying to say. And the logic was, suggesting that Joe Biden is a man of decency, a man of convictions, a man of science, and a man rooted in faith and integrity is foolish. That's a foolish idea, because the evidence, all of the evidence, points to the exact opposite. Case in point, ask the woman who's accusing him of digitally raping her. Ask her if he's a man of decency, integrity, and honesty. That's enough for today. I hope you enjoyed your second go-around in a lesson on Socratic logic. Try to apply a couple of these things in the days ahead. It might serve all of us well. I'm Dr. Everett Piper, and this is The Rebellion.